Mother Nature, Mother Nature, she's gonna get you. Yeah, she's gonna get you. Mother Nature, she's gonna hate you. She's gonna get you. Gonna get you, you betcha.
Welcome to Nature Bats Last on the Progressive Radio Network. It's NBL on PRN.FM. This edition of Nature Bats Last comes live from the Mud Hut in New Mexico. Our theme song is provided as a gift, with our thanks, by AfraZen. You can find more of his work on SoundCloud. I'll start with a statement from AfraZen. In my journey through the Dabda stages of grieving, regarding my understanding and expectation of what is to come in terms of anthropogenic climate change, this song expresses my time in the first A, anger. With time and reflection, I've made it through to the second A, acceptance, and my position regarding my lyrics has changed. They made sense when my assumptions were 1, that humanity and nature are separate, 2, that humanity is committing crimes against nature, and 3, that humanity will be punished for doing so. My thinking now is that 1, I don't see a fundamental distinction between our species and the rest of nature, and 2, humanity is behaving exactly in accordance with its evolved genetic imperatives to survive, thrive, and multiply today, regardless of the consequences tomorrow. I think my lyrics' vitriolic theme and tone are misplaced, and I suspect the song's effect might possibly be to either foster or reinforce anger and bitterness in listeners. These are natural and appropriate emotions when first waking up to the predicament we are in, as I understand it, but in my personal experience, anger and bitterness are unhelpful and detrimental if not worked through and overcome. The upsides of this new perspective for me are greater compassion and tolerance for my fellows, greater peace of mind and general happiness. I can only wish the same for others who are going through this. I really appreciate that, AfraZen, and that's why we read it on the air every month or so, to make sure that people understand that they may be going through a difficult time themselves. They may be lashing back in anger, in denial, in expressing their bitterness at the nature of the situation. But I find it very gratifying that AfraZen has worked through the process and come to the point of acceptance and now is living quite happily. Before we kick off our primary interview, I'd like to bring attention to an email exchange to which I was party last week. This exchange came in the wake of a person who volunteered to help spread my message a couple weeks earlier. I know almost nothing about this person. We've never met. I'll not reveal the person's name, sex, or location. Apparently, he or she is a media personality with a significant following in a metropolitan area. He writes, quote, "Very disappointed this morning, Guy. I'm going to keep watching from sidelines. I had huge plans, using banks of web and social conversations, information collected regarding all things climate change that apparently pissed some persons or entity off. The crowdfunding and my intended information about those plans were increasingly gathering positive steam and becoming much too public. I have been definitively warned to back off. Whatever slash whomever caused this reaction has way more power and sophistication than I could have imagined, having gained complete access to all my data, computers, and phone. I had the crap scared out of me, to say the least. I retracted all of my recent activist social postings and spent hours yesterday scrubbing all data. Please, there's no need to reply. I am neutralized. Enough said. Best of everything to you." End quote. This person's next message, after I asked for a little bit of additional information, and it's another long quote, "My phone would not shut off without taking the battery out. when I put back in, it immediately would turn on and alternate between snapping photos and resting and shooting live video mode. Okay, I realized very quickly, and now that I am not free, have any rights or liberty to carry on like I was. I never understood it to the degree I do now. I also understand strategy is a big money in a scary way that I had not considered either. At about 2 hours, I was so horrified and scared, I unplugged the internet and machine without powering down. I got it. I understand that my living life is a privilege. I really do not care to say any more about what I experienced. I cannot fully begin to go into the level of money, power, and sophistication that I believe it took to transmute a message for me, causing me to immediately get off the public path I was on. I am not addressing this issue or answering any questions again, with you or anybody, ever. I trust you to never bring my name up with any of this. Strictly a one-time FYI attempt at elaboration for yourself, not to scare you. I will deny any of this at any time. If asked, I made it up. Really, I am done on this. End quote. Interestingly, I am not subject to the kinds of acts to which this person was exposed. I receive the occasional death threat, plenty of hate mail, but I suspect they're all coming from clowns. My computer turns itself off and on, and it often grinds to a halt, but these are minor issues. In addition, I have a Lenovo laptop tablet, which apparently was built specifically to send information from this machine to other entities. But I knew that when I got it. So these are minor issues for me. In contrast, the person I've described is not the first person to be harassed as a result of interactions with me. Apparently, it's more dangerous to know me than to be me, at least if you have a large following. As this online exchange was taking place, the blog was attacked and taken offline. I know little else except what was written to me via email from one of the members of the able and dedicated group of volunteers who generously worked to repair the site and restore the deleted files from backed up versions. He wrote, quote, Guy's site has experienced intermittent issues for years that can be traced to amateur attempts to disrupt the message getting out, such as his comment section of the blog being linked to known spammer sites, resulting in hundreds of fake registrations and posts for every real person looking at the data. Those attacks were not the professional level that one would expect from a state actor, more likely useful idiots who lash out at whoever they are aimed. The hack that brought the primary site down this morning was much more sophisticated and targeted and deleted specific records, all of them with human extinction in the title, end quote. I'll be staying with a friend in Tucson tomorrow night before launching my trip to Cascadia with an early morning flight Thursday. Upon hearing the short version of this story, my friend asked me if she'd see me. I think she fears I might disappear. I don't. I realize my message is important, and I realize it's a threat to those pulling the levers of industry. Imagine, for example, if only a few million people adopted my message and begin living in the now instead of spending money on insurance and mortgages. Imagine if they didn't care about their credit rating and refused to pay their debt. Imagine if they stopped shopping for crap they don't need. In light of these imaginings, I'd be willing to bet the system would implode even faster than it already is if people absorbed my message and actually lived it. And that represents a significant threat to civilization and those who benefit from it. Still, I think revealing evidence to people is important. The citizenry is unlikely to receive relevant information from the corporate media or the corporate governments of the world. As a teacher, sharing evidence in the attendant philosophy is what I do, and it reflects who I am. Inspired by others throughout history who have uncovered and reported lies at their own risk, and here I'm thinking about Socrates, Giordano Bruno, and many others, I'd be ecstatic to be martyred for this cause, as they were martyred for the truth. I've had a good run, after all. How would I act were I tortured, or more importantly, were people I love being tortured, remains to be seen. I'd like to believe I'd be true to principle. So far, the opportunity hasn't presented itself. The irony here is quite rich. All this was happening as the United States Congress was allowing the Patriot Act to expire, thus shutting down the National Security Agency's ability to spy on American citizens. And if you believe that will happen before collapse is complete, I have some beautiful beachfront property for sale. It even has a nearby bridge to nowhere. On to the interview. It is my distinct pleasure to interview Mimi Gurman this week. Mimi was a teen when the near catastrophe at Three Mile Island occurred in 1979. Right away, she couldn't figure out why we created an energy source that had the potential to kill the planet. She went on to fight the Shoreham nuclear facility plant in New York during her college years, and she spent time protesting weapons at Seneca Women's Peace Encampment in the mid-1980s. Later, she traveled to England to protest at Greenham Common Women's Peace Encampment. Shortly after the March 2011 Fukushima disaster, she switched to full-time anti-nuclear activism and became involved in Hanford's kamikaze cleanup in 2011. She decided to take down the Columbia Generating Station in 2012. She's still working on that one. Mimi started Radcast in 2014. You can follow this work of hers at radcast.org. That's RADCAST.org. In addition to her activities as an anti-nuclear activist, Mimi is a singer and songwriter. We'll be playing one of her songs about halfway into this show. In fact, let's play her song right now. Play that song from Mimi Gurman right now. We're having something of a technical difficulty connecting with her, so we'll start off with a song by her and then welcome her to the show.
Down.
All right, we're back, and I'm going to fast forward to my climate change summary update. I've added two tidbits to the update on the blog, and you can find all the details in that often updated essay on the blog at guymcpherson.com. Item one comes from a paper in the May 2015 issue of Geophysical Research Letters. The paper indicates that the planetary warming potential of carbon dioxide outstrips its warming potential for individual use within 2 months, and the carbon dioxide's cumulative radiative forcing exceeds the amount of energy released upon combustion by a factor of more than 100,000. In other words, heat derived from an individual sitting beside a lump of coal on fire, or the industrial civilization equivalent thereof, is exceeded by heating at the planetary level within 2 months. And ultimately, the latter heating exceeds that felt by the individual by more than five orders of magnitude. In other words, we derive a little convenience by burning fossil fuels. We have come to view this minor convenience as our birthright. For a little comfort, we've fucked the planet forever. And forever is a long time, especially toward the end. On to item two. I've repeatedly explained the so-called pause or hiatus in warming since 1998. The heat has been entering the ocean, which has warmed at an exponential rate since 1998. As it turns out, even land surface temperatures have not, repeat, not stabilized. A paper in the June 3rd issue of Science spills the beans. I'll read the entire short abstract of the paper by Thomas Carl and colleagues. Quote, "Much study has been devoted to the possible causes of an apparent decrease in the upward trend of global surface temperature since 1998, a phenomenon that has been dubbed the global warming hiatus. Here we present an updated global surface temperature analysis that reveals that global trends are higher than reported by the IPCC, especially in recent decades, and that the central estimate for the rate of warming during the first 15 years of the 21st century is at least as great as the last half of the 20th century. These results do not support the notion of a slowdown in the increase of global surface temperature," end quote. In other words, there's been no pause in the rise of global average temperature rise, and as suggested by multiple lines of evidence at this point, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change continues to mislead the public with the nonsensically conservative information they put out. They continue to put out information that is eclipsed, has been eclipsed, and continues to be eclipsed by relevant information from climate science. So, I already indicated Mimi's short version of her resume. We have Mimi Gurman online with us today. Welcome to Nature Bats Last on the Progressive Radio Network, Mimi Gurman.
Thank you, Guy. I was having some difficulties, I think, with Skype, but I am so glad to be on your show today.
And we're glad to have you back.
Thank you.
And then off, and then back, and then off. But you're back again. Hopefully with a stable connection.
Right.
Technology is awesome on the occasion it works. Beyond the thumbnail sketch I've revealed, please tell us about your history as an anti-nuclear activist, and maybe weave in your perspective and your history as a musician as well.
Well, my activism started with a question, really. Well, it started with an event followed by a question, and the event was Three Mile Island, and I grew up in Philadelphia. And when Three Mile Island happened, I was a young teen, and I asked my father, you know, why this happened, and he didn't have a good answer. And so I asked again, and what I realized was that there aren't good answers when you're talking about nuclear power. There's nothing good about it. You know, you can't find a good answer because there really is nothing good to say, whether it's an answer or another question or anything of the sort. So my question that I formulated right after was, why do we use something like nuclear power when we have other sources that we could be doing? And aside from the other sources, why would we use something that can annihilate the entire planet? I never got an answer on that. And what I realized was there is no answer other than total and complete insanity. And that's the world that we live in. We live in a world where people make nuclear power and other, you know, other energies too, you know, where we violate the earth to get an energy that isn't good for us. But nuclear power being the worst, starting from uranium and the death that that causes to indigenous people and the ground itself, et cetera. So that started my questioning about where I live on this planet. And I kind of took that with me on my little journey until, you know, through now. I'm 51. And here I am. In the process, I was playing music. And my music turned, you know, more into writing about what bothered me and what I saw and what I couldn't answer. And sometimes it was in reverence of the beauty, and sometimes it was just about, you know, again, more of the insanity and how do I make sense of the insanity? Well, sometimes I would make sense of it just by making a song that would phrase it in a way that I could, I don't know, kind of hold it and handle it a little bit, you know, and go, look at this, you guys, this is really bad. And what do we do with this? And have it be a way that I could look at it and talk about it. You know, so that's where the music came in.
Well, it sounds like it's very therapeutic as well.
Yeah, it's therapeutic. Now my garden is my therapy, my garden and my dog, you know, my life, my massage practice. And I more or less left music a few years ago because it was creating its own kind of insanity. And at this point in my life, it started to end. I started to end my music and that particular form of insanity when Fukushima happened. I was on the road and it really freaked me out, leaving my home and having that happen. You know, I was like, I don't know, going over. I think I was in Nevada when that happened. So anyway, my thing now, my meditation now, or the thing that makes me have balance now is my garden. It's working in my garden. It's quiet, you know. And finding those kinds of things to help make sense of my world.
Right. That's awesome. You know, having that connection to something living is incredibly therapeutic, at least for me. So about music, you know, you indicated you sort of abandoned music for a while, and then much more recently you're back. You're writing and playing music again. So what caused you to give it up, and what caused you to bring it back?
Well, I went down to it was a few months before going down to the California Diablo Canyon strategy sessions with Donna Gilmore and Mothers for Peace and a whole lot of other groups on how to shut down Diablo Canyon. And I was thinking, listening to you, listening to lots of people who are very bright and help frame the state of being that we're all living in or dying in right now. And one day, some words came to me to try to make sense of things. And, it was that day, Guy, when I called you because I was so upset. I was so sad. And I'd written a song and it made me cry. I haven't finished that song, by the way, but I have it. And then I wrote, after I came back from Diablo Canyon, I wrote a song that also isn't finished, but it's close. And that one's called Mr. Atomic Man. And that one really questions directly Mr. Atomic Man and how he could live with himself doing what he's done to our world. You know, how can you do what you've done to our world? How can you do this? You know, and live. I could sit here. I could sit here for the rest of my life, and just if I said nothing else, just ask that question repeatedly, because I am so blown away that there are not just one guy, but many, many thousands of people who are all part of the nuclear industry who just have no soul, and it really blows my mind that these people exist.
Well, I think you sang some of that song to me, Atomic Man, when I was driving down the road with Peter Melton in his car.
Yeah.
A few months ago. So I've heard a little bit of that. Thank you, by the way, for sharing with us Waiting on a Plane, which is what we played shortly before starting this interview. That's awesome.
Yeah, I had read, when I wrote that song, I had just read an article about food drops, like, you know, somewhere around the world, that the U.S. is so proud of itself because it sends food by plane and drops it, you know, in a place that's starving, has no water. So instead of helping with infrastructure anywhere and really creating a means for the earth to create any form of hospitality to the people living on it, you know, we go up and we probably drop, you know, Wonder Bread, right? Like Wonder Bread sandwiches is all I can think of. And some grains that we don't use here that we pay the farmers to not make, you know, like corn. And we drop it on these people, and then there's like little mini wars to grab this little bit of food, which of course is going to go away. And that's if the plane shows up. You know, that's if they actually go, and it's not just a PR campaign to make us look good. And that's what right. that song is about, you know, Waiting on a Plane, like, right, you know, great solution, U.S., way to go.
Right, right. We create poverty, we bomb a country, we create hungry people, and then we drop food and claim that we're saving the world.
Right.
We're no, repeat after me, Americans. We're number one. Yeah. And you're right about the insanity. I mean, how could you view it any other way? I like one of Derek Benson's lines, one of my favorite lines of his. This cult of its members are insane. How could you argue with that?
Yeah.
And you don't even have to talk about nuclear power to reach that conclusion.
You know, just a little while ago, about an hour ago, I was out in my garden before it got way too hot here today. And I'm in Portland, Oregon, and we've had, this is our second day of probably, I think it'll get to about 92 or something. And so I was in the garden, and I had to dig up these this Lysimachia. It's a pretty plant, but it's like a weed, you know, and it has a tall stalk and it has yellow flowers when they're flowering. And then when the flowers are done, the stalk stays green for a long time, but it totally takes over your garden, you know. And I really dug them a few years ago, and now I'm like, oh man, I got to get these out of here and plant something that is better for, you know, what we want. So anyway, I'm digging that up to make some space. And then I have these big artichoke plants, and the leaves are huge fronds, you know. And I'm like, oh, well, I'll cut some of these bottom ones off so that, you know, it can stand up a little bit better. And I'm about to cut off one of the bottom leaves, you know, and my dog is there. And this isn't an issue of hurting my dog. That wasn't the point. The point was my dog was underneath that plant for shade. And those big fronds that I was going to cut off were going to impede on her shade, you know, and bring the sun in, and she'd, you know, be hot. And I was thinking about this, you know, when we're in the garden and we're on the ground, we're on the earth, and we see bugs, we see insects, we see things, and we go to do something, we actually can see what it's about to do to the next thing. We can see cause and effect. And that, I think, is so lacking in our awareness today. We have no cause and effect. We just have, at this point, chaos. And in chaos, you can't see anything. So I don't know if we can get cause and effect back, but I strongly encourage people to get on the ground. And, I mean, if it's all, just get on the ground, on your knees, on your hands, and just dig in the dirt. See what you see. Because it's so illuminating. And I just looked at that, and I saw, oh, see, this is how we could make sanity. It's everybody on the ground.
Right, but that's asking a lot. You know, a lot of people don't want to see. A lot of people don't want to acknowledge that this culture and most of its members are insane. So I suspect, in fact, a large majority of people prefer ignorance and would choose it. And in fact, have chosen it because, you know, whether you're dealing with the nuclear issue or climate change or the ongoing decline of American empire or patriarchy and all that stems from it, including every civilization so far, you have to be blind and deaf and not very bright to not recognize the insanity that's going on all around us. And yet, almost everybody I know refuses to recognize the insanity that's going on all around us. Can you comment about that a little bit?
Yeah, I'd be happy to, because I'm living it right now. I had this thing happen about 3 weeks ago now. So I never say this is the short version, because when people say that, it's always a super long version. So this is the version. So a couple weeks ago, our legislature in Oregon decided to listen to a new bill to let it be heard, and it's called 3445, House Bill. And it's to create a nuclear task force made up of, I don't know how many people, it doesn't really matter, but let's just say there were 10 people on the board. Every single one was in the nuclear field. And there was no one there that was even just relatively neutral. It was a nuclear task force to determine if we should be looking at nuclear technology, meaning small modular reactors, which are being made at Oregon State University, to come into the forefront as a technology for our state. And all of this, while we already have a law in Oregon that states we cannot and will not have nuclear technology in our state until there's a safe federal repository somewhere. And safe is key here, okay? We don't have a repository. We did. It wasn't safe, and it's sort of impossible. So no nukes for Oregon, right? Well, that bill was able to be heard, even though the representatives on that bill who were presenting that bill were part of the same committee that was hearing that bill, part of the Energy Committee. Okay, so these are two representatives from the Energy Committee who missed the deadline for their own committee to get their own bill heard, and yet the committee decides they're going to hear it as a courtesy. So five of us go to testify against this bill, to say this is crazy, we have a law against this, you can't do this, and the fact that, you know, so anyway, we go to testify in opposition. Well, I knew that two of the people of the five of us were coming just straight up with facts, right? Because they're good that way. It's facts. Bring facts. And two other people were coming with slightly more of an emotional and factual testimony. And mine was to just call out the bullshit on this entire thing, you know, to say, wow, this is like a kangaroo court here, right? So we get to me, and I do my testimony. And I called them all out. And two of the members walked out of the Energy Committee, the representatives.
You scared them away.
Oh, yeah. Well, they were really pissed off. So they left. And when I was done, they came back in. And they heard the next person. And then the very last person who they were supposed to hear, they cut her off completely and said they were out of time because they allowed this nuclear task force, this bill, to take 90 minutes of their time. It was supposed to be 3 minutes each. They got 90 minutes to present their PR on the wonders of small modular reactors. Well, that's not even the end of the story. So afterwards, we leave, and we're in the halls of, you know, the great big legislative building, you know, our in Salem. And I find out that one of the people who was with us testifying against, you know, in opposition to this bill, went to the chair's office. The chair walked out on me, you know. He goes to the chair's office, and he apologizes for my testimony, unbeknownst to me. I found this out the next day, and I was really floored. I was floored. I couldn't believe that somebody who was supposedly on our, in quotes, side, you know, for sanity, for, you know, no nukes, would think to apologize to the very people who are going to create a task force to bring small modular reactors into the fore. Right? It's not like that's not going to happen. The Department of Defense has already given the small modular reactor, NuScale is the owner of this, plus OSU. They've given them $217 million for a starter grant, right? This is going to happen. So this guy, who I've known, goes and he apologizes for me. And what I've done is, just to be clear, I have presented the truth and I've called it out, right? So this isn't I'm not saying this to create, like, you know, silent applause for me. That, again, is not the point. The point is that people are so freaked out in this chaotic time that they still think that the very people who don't care if they live or die are somehow going to care if they apologize for the actions of somebody who's speaking the truth to them, because the truth cannot be heard at any cost. And that is what really blew my mind, you know? And I'm still reeling from that. And then the same person comes to us, the five of us. He's one of the five, and he says, I've been talking to people, and we should do mediation. And I said, mediation? Like, we, meaning no nukers who all do the same thing. We all try to shut down nuke plants, you know, that we should have mediation together in order to get along. And I said, you apologized for me speaking the truth. I cannot get along with that. I'm always going to speak the truth, because that's the only thing we have left. That's it. There is no room for political correctness. There is no room to pretend that people are in power, because they're not in power. They've been elected by getting money. They haven't been elected by the people. They've been elected by outdoing somebody else because of the dollar. It's not real. None of it is real. So to apologize to the emperor who has new clothes was like, oh my God. So anyway, Guy, that is how I feel about all this. That people, most people I know, cannot handle truth at all, no matter where they stand on protecting the earth. And that is scary.
Well, yeah, I agree. Everybody tells me they want to know the truth, unless it's about them. Then that's just a little too, it's a too bitter a pill to swallow. This is Nature Bites Last on the Progressive Radio Network. I'm chatting today with anti-nuclear activist and musician Mimi Gurman. So thanks for that wonderful overview of your party with the Oregon legislature regarding small modular reactors. Let's talk about the other big issue in your part of the world. There's a crack in the Columbia Generating Station that goes unspoken. Speaking the unspeakable, as you just pointed out, is something we just don't do, at least for reward. Can you talk about that unspoken, ignored, try to cover it up under the rug crack at CGS, the Columbia Generating Station?
Yeah. Oh, you mean that indication? When we got word that there was a crack inside the reactor, it's in a jet pump rise. That's what it's called. It's called a riser. But it's inside the reactor, and it's part of the water system for keeping fuel rods cool. So there's a crack in it. And when we found out, just about, I don't know, maybe it's been 2 months ago, I can't remember at this point, but not that long ago, we found out sort of by mistake, and I called up KABU Radio. KABU Radio in Portland is radio for the people, by the people. And we're so lucky we have that. And everybody can have that, by the way. This isn't like a promo for KABU, but it's true. If you want truthful radio, KBOO.FM is where you can go, and they stream everywhere. But anyway, I called up KABU to the news, my friend Jenka, and I told her about this. And she called immediately. She called over to Energy Northwest, and she said, I hear there's a crack in the reactor. Well, they didn't want to talk to her about it. So she said, well, I'm going to be interviewing a few people later today and doing a story on it. So, you know, are you sure you don't want to comment? And they didn't want to comment, but the PR guy wrote emails back and forth to Jenka. And in those emails, we found out that they've known about this crack since 2001. And these cracks are known to occur in this particular boiling water reactor, either Mark 1 or Mark 2s. And CGS is a Mark 2. And by the way, CGS is in Washington State, and if anything happens to that, all of Cascadia is toast. So anyway, questions were asked, you know, and as soon as he realized that I wasn't going to stop moving forward with this, and other people weren't going to stop questioning, they changed the term from crack to indication. And I did research really quickly that day by calling experts on this, and Paul Gunter from Beyond Nuclear explained to me how dangerous these are, and they're very, very dangerous. And they, again, they've known about it since 2001. So the way that you test how bad a crack is, meaning how deep it is, how long it is, you know, all kinds of things, you have to do an ultrasound. So I asked over there, you know, have you guys done an ultrasound? And this is the NRC person over there from the Nuclear Regulatory Committee. And he's commissioned. And anyway, he said, well, I don't know. I don't know if they've done an ultrasound. And he never got back to me about it. He was supposed to. And of course he knows. So none of the proper testing to find out the length and depth of this crack have been done since 2001. Right now, the reactor is still down for refueling. And it's a shame that we don't have the power today to just keep it shut down and make them do this through an injunction, you know, yesterday. They can, one injunction has been issued. They haven't replied to that injunction yet. And I am about to create a second injunction to try to keep it down, or when it goes back up, get it shut down again so that this happens, this ultrasound. So this is all part of the insanity. You have people working at a nuclear power plant that has a crack in it. They don't care. You know, if they don't care, do you think they care about you? You know, and I know most people know that these people don't care about us. I mean, especially your listeners, Guy. But do you include nuclear when you talk about, not you, Guy, but listeners, do you include nuclear when you talk about coal, when you talk about gas, when you talk about climate change, when you talk about climate catastrophe? Nuclear is going to be the first to go, just so y'all know this. When things get too hot on the planet, the cooling systems will have issues. If they don't have water, you're going to have meltdowns all over. You know, there's like 440-some nuclear power plants across the world. These are gonna go. And when they go, they're going to kill mass amounts of anything living where these radionuclides fall. So it will be the first to go. We saw earthquake and stupidity caused Fukushima. All human error has caused every major nuclear catastrophe so far, but now we're also getting, you know, Earth involvement in that. So I encourage you not to be afraid to use the term nuclear and tell people, if, you know, do something. Just know it exists. It's very difficult to conquer a nuclear power plant and get it shut down. And then, of course, we have all of the waste, you know. But not talking about it doesn't make it go away, and not talking about it certainly doesn't save your ass, you know?
Right, and I include Fukushima times a few hundred in every one of my presentations anymore, because there's a direct link between collapse of industrial civilization and climate change. An abrupt rise in global average temperature will occur in the immediate wake of the collapse of industrial civilization. And not only that, but ionizing radiation will be spewing all over the globe. I get a lot of pushback about that. People tell me all the time that we can withstand that, that humans and other organisms don't have any problem with ionizing radiation. Do you want to talk a little bit about the mechanism and timing with which that ionizing radiation has catastrophic and otherwise, if you can think of anything otherwise?
Yeah, we're already getting killed by ionizing radiation. And it's not just from Fukushima at all. Every nuke plant leaks. Every nuke plant leaks when it gets shut down for refueling, when it comes back on for after refueling. When those leak, we get cancer. That's just what happens. It goes up, you know, through the stacks, goes out, and we get cancer. There's a reason that every single person at this point knows somebody who has cancer. And it's not necessarily just from Monsanto. You know, that's probably a large part, you know, and we're eating plastics and chemicals and things that Monsanto hasn't even figured out how to put into their food yet, you know. But the ionizing radiation, being invisible, does come down. You breathe it in. We all do. We can't get away from it because we have nuclear power. And as long as we have nuclear power plants, that's going to be a continuing problem. Now, leakage in nuclear power plants doesn't only happen during shutdowns for refueling and restarts. It also happens due to just human error and people not telling us what's going on. I don't put any trust into the NRC or the EPA or the IAEA. They all lie. We know that. We've already proven this. And we've proven it over and over again to the point where to need to prove it again is just, it's a waste of time. You know, it's like you do the research. We've already done it. And so the amount of deaths that are occurring from cancers now, I do believe are coming from this. And Chris Busby just put out a new report on the effects of living close range to nuclear power plants. And he's proven yet again that the closer you are just in living to a nuclear power plant, the more cancers you and your neighbors are going to get. So this is already a reality. It's just going to get worse. And Guy, I mean, the ocean, the Pacific right now, it's a toxic dump with radionuclides. And all of these terms, these fun, pretty terms of, you know, dilution, it's all bullshit. You can't dilute a radionuclide. It doesn't happen. It might not get to you, but it probably will if you eat fish, you know, or if you swim in the ocean and you swallow water. It's kind of like that. It's definitely doom, you know. It's definitely a doomy discussion because it's real and it's happening.
Absolutely, and there aren't very many places you can have this conversation. I appreciate you having it with me and with our audience. This is great stuff.
You know, Guy, I saw yesterday, there's a person who does some testing up in Ottawa, and he goes out in the rain and he's been doing rain tests for a long time. And Ottawa gets a considerable amount of radiation in the rain, and last night he went out, and it was like almost 6.5 microsieverts on his meter, and he films it, you know. And it was near a drain, which is where we usually go and we test these things, you know, because it all wells up in one area, and it's better for testing with your meter. So, again, this isn't futuristic. This is yesterday and today. And radionuclides live for, you know, some for thousands of years. And when it goes into your body, it's going to go into your bones, depending on, you know, what particle you've eaten. Strontium, for instance. And if it's cesium, it's heart attacks, it's tissue cancers. You know, it goes on and on. And, man, I wish it was futuristic. But it's not.
Right. Well, I mean, it's yet another one of those cases where, and I use this example a lot, the science fiction writers Aldous Huxley, Ray Bradbury, and George Orwell claimed that they were just writing what they were seeing going on right now. They weren't writing about the future. They were writing about right now. And everybody thought they had an amazing ability to see the future. They claimed they were just seeing what's happening right now. And certainly I can relate to that, and I'm sure you can too.
Yeah, I've been trying to live my life differently since, I don't know, a while ago, a long time ago, but really making a concerted effort now. Somebody pointed out to me that that using less is a concept that is great for anything and everything. But when I realized that, for instance, just having a plug plugged in, when my energy company, PGE, uses energy from this nuclear power plant, just having something plugged in means that I'm accepting having nuclear power, you know? And that's really difficult for me because I'm so opposed to nuclear power. So I've been doing something where I try to only plug in when I need to until I can get solar panels, which I'm working on. And I'm not going by way of Wall Street solar panels. So I'm waiting for the same person to finish with his, get his company together so I can get them and be off grid. And I also encourage people as a challenge. I always like a challenge, you know. So I am trying to get my electric bill down to like, oh man, the average in Oregon is like 900 and something kilowatts or something like that. I'm not really adept at talking about energy terms that way, but it's high. Oregon's high. And I want to get ours down to where another anti-nuke activist is in Virginia. And I heard that hers is down to like 300 kilowatts a month, you know? So it's a challenge. It's a challenge to use less and unplug from the system that you work against. So for instance, I don't go to protests anymore, like marches and things like that. I don't think they do anything. But folks, I'm not telling you what to do. I don't really care what you do. But for me, I don't think they do anything, so I don't go. But when I did go, you know, let's say we're at an environmental march or something, people are smoking. You know, they're smoking cigarettes. And it's like, do you know that like you are not only saying yes to nicotine makers, to cigarette makers, but you are making love to them. You are ingesting them. You are, you know, I don't know how much language I can use on this show. Is this a show where language is free? Like I can just speak?
Yeah, you can say what you want.
You are fucking the cigarette company. You know, you are having a fuck fest. You are inviting them inside your organs, you know, to wreak havoc on you because that is your particular thing, you know, while you fight for the earth. What is that?
You know? You make that sound like a bad thing.
I mean, people, you know, to each your own, man, but don't smoke near me. And that's what I mean. It's just the chaos is deep, guy, isn't it? You know, it's everywhere. See, that's a chaotic move, right?
Yes. Now you mentioned that you don't do petitions anymore. It seems to me that fighting the system does nothing anymore. I'm inclined to believe all we have left is to serve as witnesses. Can you comment on that? I think you were headed down that road, and I'd love for you to speak a little bit more about it.
Yeah, you know, I have. I'm confused with one thing regarding my own actions, and that is, if there's a way to use the system against itself, if there is, for instance, with me in particular, I want to make another injunction against CGS because I don't know how far the people who created the first injunction against CGS, I don't know how far they're going to take it. I only know from me what I'm going to do, you know? So I create this injunction. Well, the injunction goes into the system to fight the system, right? So it's sort of against what I've been talking about, which is you can't fight the system. Now, I don't know if this will even do anything. All I know is that it's the only way to, you know, to do this, to shut down a power plant without the power plant just deciding on its own through pressures, different kinds of pressures, that it's too expensive to fix something and, you know, or just, there's a couple different ways to shut it down. But an injunction is one to get the test that we want. And then they find out, well, we don't want to deal with this, you know. So I'm doing it. I do things at this point as like social experiments. You know, I don't know if an injunction will do anything. I've spoken with a wonderful lawyer whose name is Diane Curran, and we only have like two lawyers who know how to fight the NRC. And Diane said to me that it is worth doing because they have worked. So she said, what will happen is you create the injunction petition. They ignore you. At some point, they have to get back to you. Then you appeal their negativity, you know, and until something happens. So will it do anything? I have no idea, but I'm kind of keen on trying that because it is a known way to go about this. And yet I feel it's very contrary to how I really feel because I don't feel that you can fight the system at all. That's really, like, if you ask where my heart is with all this, no, I don't think it's going to work. you know, but I live here, you know, and I'm like, I listen to the bird songs and I'm like, oh my God, okay, so I'm going to try this injunction. Now other people can say, well, that's why we march and that's why we do this and that. So what I have to say about it is this. I was told this a couple of years ago. You have to, as an activist, as an individual doing something or trying to create change, you have to do this. And most people never do this. You have to look at what you've done and look at what you've done for the last 3 weeks. Look at what you've done for the last 6 months or the last year and ask yourself, and you can only do this if you're honest about it, has anything that I've done made a dent in what I'm trying to do? And I can say for me, yes, it has. So I'm going to add to that this injunction and see what happens. But I do that. I stop and look. And if I can't see a change from, let's just say, a march, you know, or signing 100 petitions, people don't even know where the hell these petitions go, you know? Has anybody followed one petition to find out if it went to where the hell it said it was going to go rather than to some admin or some junk box? They're so ridiculous to me, you know? People do this stuff blindly, thinking, oh, I've just done something. Well, what have you done? If you know that it's gone somewhere, then great. Why don't you tell all of us about it so that we can know that? We don't know anything. People just, we don't know anything. And I'm sick of people not knowing anything, you know?
Yes. Yes, I'm sick of people being willfully ignorant.
Yeah, so, me too.
We're out of time, Mimi Gurman.
Huh, that was quick, guy.
It always goes so fast when I'm engaged in serious conversation with somebody who knows what's going on in the world. It goes by in an instant. Thank you so much, Mimi Gurman, for joining us on Nature Bats Last today.
Thank you, Guy. Thanks for having me and having this discussion.
You bet. We'll do it again sometime, and I hope to see you within the next couple of weeks when I'm on speaking tour, a tour that includes Portland, Oregon.
Oh, I need your schedule. Yes.
Okay. I'll get it to you soon.
Okay,
great. Or you can find it at the coming events tab for my listeners at naturebatslast@guymcpherson.com.
Perfect.
Okay. Thanks again, Mimi. I appreciate it. A couple weeks ago, I promised to read my hate mail on the air and then respond to it. I think the story with which I started this episode will suffice for this week. And if you want vitriol, I could launch into the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. But I won't. Not because I believe I'm above that sort of thing, but because we're out of time. Maybe next week. That wraps up another week. Make sure to like our Facebook page, Nature Bats Last, on the Progressive Radio Network, and join our Facebook group as well. It's Nature Bats Last on PRN.fm. Feel free to post questions you'd like us to address on the show. And please continue to follow my blog, GuyMcPherson.com, for further updates, essays, and speaking tours. Also, be sure to pay a visit to onlyloveremains.org to learn about the workshop I've developed with my friend and colleague, Pauline Schneider. Mike will host next week's show while I'm touring British Columbia, Washington, and Oregon. You can catch up with my tours at the coming events tab at Nature Bats Last. You can catch Mike on the radio next Tuesday afternoon. If you missed the show, make sure to find us in the archives at prn.fm and also rate us on iTunes. Thanks again to all the excellent contributions this week and to AfroZen for the music. Until next time, remember the dominant culture has been very clever, but in the end, Nature Bats Last.